Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, where we connect with educators from across the globe who are creating a better future for learning and educating now by implementing bold ideas and fostering a sense of curiosity, creativity, and possibility.
Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast. I'm your co-host, Joshua Faden, here with my other co-host, Michael Carson.
Hello.
We are thrilled to have Amanda Muhammad here with us today. Amanda is the founder and principal of Mako Mindfulness and just an all-around wonderful, positive burst of energy. And so we're so thrilled to have you on our podcast today, Amanda. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here with you guys.
And I second everything Josh said. Times two. Perfect.
Times seven.
Ooh. Times seven.
There we go. I like it.
Yes. Lucky number seven.
Yeah.
Very good. So Amanda, we're so thrilled, as I said, to have you here. And one of the things that we've loved talking to you about and getting to know is just kind of you as a person and your journey. Because you were in education, you were a teacher, and now you're rocking it as this amazing consultant teaching mindfulness and how to be able to deal with stress management. And so we're curious if you could just kind of talk a little bit about that journey for us today.
Yeah, definitely. So let me just like take it kind of all the way back and tell you about kind of where I found these practices. So when I was in college at the University of Kansas, this is back in 2008, 2009, my family was going through a lot of hardship. And, you know, even, you know, my personal life, I had a few friends that were murdered. I was experiencing a lot, you know, and then I was down at school and I was, you know, trying to join my sorority, all kinds of things going on, right? And I wasn't really sleeping. And, you know, I was taking a shot to relax myself enough to get to a point where I would go to sleep, right? Well, my mom didn't know that I was doing that, but she knew that I wasn't sleeping. And so she invites me out to a yoga class after one of my brothers had encouraged her to stretch because she was so stressed. And so, you know, he was taking some class down at Emporia State University that made him this expert in knowing that she needed to stretch. So she goes to yoga. She loves it. She drags me to yoga. And so I do my first yoga class. So we're in Shavasana. And this is your final resting pose. And after we come out, I go, Mom, somebody was snoring so loud. And she cracks up and she goes, Mandy, that was you. And I was like, what? I was like, what? Wait a minute. I was like, what is this thing that has literally just like allowed me to get to this point where I could relax? There was no substances. I just like stretched and I took some deep breaths. And I was knocked out to the point. I didn't know I was knocked out. And so I got hooked, right? So she buys me this little purple yoga mat from TJ Maxx. And I'm like rolling it out down in my college town and, you know, practicing yoga and just, you know, just figuring some stuff out. And I dove into this book called The Secret. A lady at the church gave it to my mom. And I found out about the true power of your mind and of positivity. And that really kind of birthed this entire journey of understanding that I could use my breath, I could use my body, I could use the power of my mind to create a great day, which is, you know, my slogan now. And so, you know, those were these tools that I just kind of like had in my back pocket. I would like do yoga on my own, was nobody's expert. And at the time when I was down at KU, I was studying business. So my undergraduate degree was management, leadership, HR. So I just knew that when I graduated, I was going to go off into corporate America and be somebody's human resources director is what I thought I was going to be. So I get to corporate America. I look around and most people are pretty freaking miserable, right? And there were no resources, right? And there were no resources for them to manage their stress. And so I actually ended up going to grad school and studying organizational leadership out of hopes that it would position me to be somebody's human resources director, right? And also, you know, with human resources, I wanted to do this whole like recruiting route and like, you know, help people get into roles where they really loved it, where they felt like they were maximizing their potential. But as you may or may not know, HR is a super catch 22 field. Like you got to have experience to get experience. And it was a mess, right? I ended up moving to Dallas with this position. And I saw the same thing in another office. I was like, geez, like most people around me are pretty miserable. And so it was like, okay, you know, I still had my tools in my back pocket. And what I knew at this point was when I used them, they were very effective. When I didn't use them, it was very obvious, right? And so, you know, now I'm at my second like big corporate job coming out of college in hopes to, again, go into this, you know, human resources route. I left and went to a small private recruiting company and I saw the same thing. Now, I only lasted there for 4 months. I'm pretty sure I quit the day that I was going to get fired. And my friend says, you know, you just need to make some money. So he said, why don't you like start substitute teaching? He was a former athlete at the University of Kansas. And I, you know, I knew him from there. I knew that he was subbing and then he like became a gym teacher. But I was like, okay, whatever. And so I get into education where, you know, I would start subbing and I had such a great like natural connection with these kids. And I looked up and I saw some of the same things with the adults as I saw in corporate. I saw that there were a lot of folks that were very stressed and there weren't any resources in place to help them manage it, right? And so like here, I'm like, but how? I'm like, there's art on the walls and socially appropriate hugs. Like, what do you mean? Like, how are you this stressed? But education is incredibly stressful. And so I, you know, I subbed for a little bit, but actually ended up becoming a full-time teacher with time and doing second grade reading. And, you know, while I was there, I really enjoyed it. I love being around the kids. I loved learning about this field that's like so different from my like corporate space, but yeah. Seeing that there were the same issues as in corporate, which was the fact that there just simply weren't many resources to help folks manage the stress that they were experiencing. And so, you know, I, in my classes, had began teaching students things like breathing exercises, began doing lots of like optimistic and engaging exercises with the students that I was working with and forming these great relationships with some of these kids. Now, if I'm being completely honest, was I the best teacher? No. But I knew how to build a relationship and I knew that I had a resource that made a difference. And so I remember one of the teachers sending me a video of a kid before a math class. I have the video somewhere and he's doing these deep breathing exercises and he's like taking his hands out and up and he's breathing out and bringing them back down. And he's trying to focus before his math test. And I wasn't in the room. And at that point I was like, okay. I was like, oh, there's something here.
It's catching on. Like,
yeah. And the teacher had texted me this and I think I was like gone. I think I was out of the office that day or, you know, I was like out of the school. But she had texted me this and I was like, wow. I was like, but what if she could lead that entire class in that practice? And I was like, and further, what if this teacher had the tools to manage her stress? Right. And so I knew that, you know, I had began facilitating trainings with another organization. And I knew that I had another training that, you know, I was certified in that I could go and actually really make a difference. And I began actually teaching different teachers at the school yoga classes and also facilitating yoga classes for seventh graders and or for the middle schoolers at our school because my campus was K-8 and I worked with second graders, but I did host like a club for yoga. And the kids really enjoyed it. And it was such a powerful and like moving experience. And I knew that although I loved being around the kids and although I loved being in the school, I knew that it wasn't a fit for me. But I did know that I knew how to facilitate the heck out of these practices that I'm learning, you know, with stress management, and that every training that I did, I'm getting raving feedback. And so I decided to let someone else take over and get those kids what they needed as far as reading, and that I was going to be the resource to help the teachers get what they needed as far as healing and coping and be able to share those practices with the students. I knew that I would have a much further reach and a bigger impact that way. And so I left my job and I built this company and just like pressed go and started working with educators on different strategies that they could use for managing their stress and for sharing these practices with the students that they serve.
It's a wonderful journey, Amanda, from that discovery and taking that action, you know, just based on knowing you had something special and knowing that, you know, okay, this thing has legs.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, oftentimes, like when I do interviews, people say, you know, tell me who you are and how you got here. You know, I always say it's just been an exercise of me following what feels really good and what is impactful. And if I may say, like, what feels in alignment with my purpose here that I feel that God has for me. And so just continuing to follow that and knowing that I wanted to serve and that that capacity might look a little bit different for me. And if things don't look good, feel good, like, how can I make it feel better? And then following that and following that, you know. You know, I wanted to be in human resources and help people maximize their potential. That has not changed. The delivery has changed, but at its core, it is still helping people to show up in these spaces where, you know, there's people who, you know, I fell into education, but there are people who were put on this earth, like, to be like educators. And, you know, that is what they want to do. They want to be in the classroom. They want to work directly with the kids every single day. And it is beautiful. But a lot of our teachers are very burnt out and they are overlooked and they are not cared for. And that takes away from them and their ability to show up and be their best selves. And so if I can, you know, get them some strategies, some tools, some resources to help them to stay engaged, to help them to be, you know, to feel like they can keep going in something that they love so deeply, like, then that's what I'm going to do.
I love it. I think that that's really a valuable and important part of, like you were saying, HR is essentially, it is what you're doing. You're helping people to maximize themselves, whether it's students, whether it's teachers, whether it's corporate. And the thing that I find so interesting about what you were talking about with your journey, I mean, obviously, besides Mom Knows Best is, of course, where she got you to do that yoga. But in the yoga and in those moments, when you were talking about Shavasana, the final resting pose, it allowed you to pause, right? It's a position that's meant to just pause and allow you just be. And I think that that's a powerful tool, as you're talking about, how do we give tools? You know, we can't see the pivots that we need to make if we don't pause to reflect and to see where we are. And so I'm curious if you can kind of maybe speak to, in those moments of change for you, what were those pauses and how did you provide those time and space and energy for yourself to be able to see them and to make them?
Yeah, you know, the practice of pausing is so powerful and so necessary, even to just check in and make sure that what you're doing is in line. Like, does it even feel good? You know, sometimes we just go, go, go. And especially folks that are, you know, ambitious and, you know, have dreams and all of that, we just go. And there's definitely been some times, like, in these last 12 years of, you know, developing all of this, there's definitely been times where there's been a significant, like, pause. And the interesting thing about what you're saying is if I didn't initiate the pause was initiated for me. And in those moments when we can get quiet is where I've been able to find the most clarity and propelled into the most, like, I find that direction. You know what I mean? Like, I get back on the, like, path that was never defined, right? Like, you just get back to resetting. So, you know, I think about that moment often where it's like, wow, like, you know, who, like, I was at such peace, you know, I didn't even know that I was, like, snoring. And then the pause in between those transitions, those pivotal moments where my career, like, I thought I was going to be a human resources manager. And now, like, I mean, I still work, because like you mentioned, I work corporate too. But, you know, falling all the way into education, but just, like, stopping and checking in and noticing, like, is this where I want to be? And also why, like, why do I want to be in this space? Why do I want to impact these people? You know, stepping back and letting yourself get that clarity. And then also speaking to how it can be forced on you, you know, even, you know, for teachers that are working in the space when they aren't paying attention to how they're feeling. And then, you know, some type of stress-related sickness might, you know, creep up and force them into a pause where they are forced to sit and reflect on, you know, how not taking care of themselves or how not being taken care of or cared for impacts their life. So I think, you know, when we talk about pause, I'm just like in a rabbit hole with it. I just think that a pause I think that a pause can look so many different ways. You know what I mean? And but you have to pay attention to them, and you have to, you know, be present enough to recognize when you are in a season of pause, and, you know, let yourself kind of sit and evaluate, you know, what comes next after this? Like, what is this preparing me for? What am I gearing up this like energy? Where are you sending me? Where am I going? And is it in alignment with what I'm called to do?
So how do you, Amanda, you know, how do you really get teachers and educators to pause? And I asked that question just kind of with the background of knowing that, you know, a lot of times when people are in that stressed state for a while, whatever it's caused by, you know, the things you mentioned or just, you know, whatever it is, that, you know, people, they're kind of afraid of a pause, you know. Oh, yeah. It's kind of like, that's the thing. It's like that self-fulfilling prophecy of like, I know I'm stressed, but I don't want to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I think, you know, first starting there, a lot of people don't slow down because they're afraid of the thoughts that will come up. I think this is why, you know, things like this quarantine can be so hard for people, because we stack our schedules, especially here in America. We just stack from morning to night with things to do. And there isn't that opportunity to pause. Can I go into a little science lesson?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if we think about historically, right, this is something that I really touch on in my trainings, but historically, the way that stress has, you know, presented itself, and I'm talking caveman historically, right? Caveman leaves his cave, goes and looks for some food. In a moment, maybe he gets approached by a saber-toothed tiger, right? His heart rate's going up, blood pressure's going up, breath rate's going up. All of these different things are going on in his life just to prepare him to fight or flight or get to this place of safety and, like, you know, where he can, you know, make whatever decision he needs to make in that snap moment to get back or to make sure that he can survive. Right now, when the caveman, once that incident is over, caveman goes home to his cave and he rests and restores and brings his body back down to a state of homeostasis where he can actually, you know, like rest and reset. Right now, our body still respond to the stress the same way. But the thing is that we're experiencing those saber-toothed tigers from the moment that we wake up to the moment that we go to sleep. And our body is constantly reacting to it over and over and over again. But what you don't hear about is that opportunity that after that stressful moment happens, that we go home and that we relax and that we restore. And because of the way that our world has evolved, our body still at its core is responding to those stressful situations the same, but our world is completely different, right? And so we're not taking that time to allow our bodies to come back down to that state of homeostasis, to relax, to restore, and to prepare ourselves for the next very stressful event. And so when you talk about how do I get people to practice that pause, this is why my methodology does not have anything to do with you going for a 60-minute yoga class, going for a run, and making sure that you get 8 hours of sleep. These things are fantastic, right? And they're really great for your stress. But what I learned very quickly when I was working with teachers, when I was working with, you know, working mothers and fathers and people who have these very busy lives, is that it's not realistic for me to come into these spaces and ask you to carve out 3 hours of your time a day for self-care. So what I focus on to get teachers and folks to pause is, what are these accessible things that we can do throughout the day to manage our stress? If you can take 30 seconds to take some deep breaths and just ground yourself between periods and transition periods, if you can stop and think about, what am I grateful for in this moment? Where do I feel this in my body? Where do I need to stretch? What do I need in this moment? Like, if you can take that moment to pause just throughout your day and check in and have strategies that can help you cope with that, you know what I mean? That's where we can really build that resilience. So it's not so much about, you know, the pause and the time of that pause would be really great. If you have the hour, the 2 hours, the 3 hours to give it, by all means, please do. But the majority of folks that I come across, they do not have that time. They do not have that flexibility. And so what I have to teach them is strategies that they can scatter, that we know that it accumulates over time, that this is additive, that this is something that the more that we practice it, even if it's just little bits at a time, that they will begin to build those resilience muscles. Because ultimately, we want to have strategies in place that are going to change the way that we process and perceive that stressful information. So, you know, we have to be using tools that can help us to kind of reframe these situations, that can help us to see the bigger picture, that can help us to calm down our stress response system when it's activated because we have a million things on our to-do list. So if while you're doing your things, you can take deep breaths. If, you know, while you're in your car, you can decide to turn down the music and turn up your breathing exercises or your gratitude, or you choose to, you know, watch something positive over something negative. You choose to turn off your tweets. You choose to turn mm-hmm. off the news. You choose mm-hmm. to, you know, make those choices. And what, just one last thing, you know, when we're under chronic levels of stress, you know, the parts of our brain that make sense of things, you know, that actually make these rational decisions, they shut down. And so it's very hard for us to choose things that are good for us. But when you scatter practices like that throughout your day, when you are constantly in touch with those different things, your brain can actually find it as a resource to say, hey, do that breathing thing. Hey, it's okay. We're going to get through this. Hey, there's a way to reframe this. But we have to get it in place to see it as a resource. And we do that through practice, through repetition, and we can get there by just constantly having these touch points throughout the day.
Yeah. I think it's a brilliantly explained sort of evolutionary almost metaphor that's true about the nervous system. And I think what's great about, and I'm just saying this, I think this is a really important thing that you highlighted on, this idea of scattering, mindfulness, this type of, you know, self-compassion exercises throughout the day, is that the brain is an association machine. The brain is just, you know, taking the environment we're in, feeling at a time, what's going on, and it's putting all that information together. And so, you know, 2 hours of meditation isn't going to do as much good in the sense that it will not be associated with the environment in which you actually need to be relaxed, right? Yeah. You actually do yourself a favor. Again, not that that's bad, you know, right, long meditation, but you're actually doing yourself a favor by taking 30 seconds to be intentional about your breathing a few times throughout the day, because what I think folks find, and I'm curious if you see this in your work, I notice it with myself, the more I do that, the more I catch my breath slowing down and I'm like, oh, I need to be a little bit more mindful right now. Like the body actually starts to automate it, which I think is such a, like you said, it's an additive process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I do see that. And, you know, that's part of my training. Like I would rather you do 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week, than do 25 minutes one day a week, right? Because it's about building the habit. It's about giving your brain that opportunity mm-hmm. to like have to build those associations, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And to know, hey, if you're stressed, do this. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're stressed, do this, right? Like, so it's building out that neural pathway through repetition. So repetition is the key, right? Like, it's just like if you want to master a recipe, or if you want to be a really great basketball player. So like I used to play basketball, right? So when my coach would call out a play, the reason why I knew exactly what to do is because I've been practicing, right? Calls out a play immediately. You know, muscle memory. I know what to do, right?
Exactly.
It's the same thing when it comes to your self-care. Mm-hmm. We have to treat it just like anything else we want to be really good at. It is an exercise. So we have to have those touch points, those practice to say, hey, when life calls out a play, do this, right? And then that's your strategy.
Yeah, and I think everyone listening that thought they were going to have to do, you know, an hour meditation a day can take a nice deep sigh.
Oh, for sure.
See, snuck a little mindfulness in there, guys. Gotcha.
There you go. Very nice. Yeah, but, you know, sometimes that's all it takes. You know, let me tell you, because people think, and, you know, y'all have seen my LinkedIn, my Instagram, I am an optimistic, you know, I am what they call it. Anyways, I'm an optimist, right? Yes. I have no shame in that. I am an optimist and I'm proud to be one. I love what being an optimist positions me to be able to do, and how it positions me to be able to, you know, serve and help others. And now I have just forgotten my train.
No, I mean, you're exactly, but again, it's almost like this amplifying optimism in education is a perfect way for us to have you on here, right? Because that optimism, it's not a bad word. It's not a negative thing. It's in fact, the exact opposite. It's finding the moments to provide that the path for the hope, right? And making it habitual.
Yeah, Absolutely. Oh, here's what I was going to say. I've got it. Thank you so much, Josh. Yes. I was going to say, you know, people see that and so they think, oh, she doesn't have bad days. I do have bad days. I'm human, right? Like, you know, I'm trying to process, right? I'm trying to process the same things everyone else is. I have been in quarantine. I haven't been able to see my family much. I, you know, have lost loved ones to this virus. I am juggling all of that as well. But these practices that I do allow me to get back to a space. It allows me to embrace it and accept it. Because this optimistic approach is not about sweeping it under the rug like it's not happening. It's about understanding that, yes, these things are happening. And yes, they are hard. And I have to process them. And then I also have tools in place to keep going. Because the issue is that we have a tendency to stay stuck in those places. But we can make the choice to use practices like this to help us move out of that space. So the other day, I woke up and I was so grumpy. Like, I was just like wrong side of the bed. Like, you know, I had slept in but then my phone went off and I was like, cause I could have slept in longer. Right. So I get up and I get to my desk and I'm just like, I don't want to do anything, you know? And then I sat down and I was like, shoot, but you have a lot you have to get done today. I had some proposals I needed to work on. And I know that the way that I show up, even when I'm working on my proposals, matters for my work, right? And so I was like, okay, I've got to get myself into a better position. So I sat down, I read my devotional, I took some deep breaths, and I thought about what I was grateful for. And I thought about impact, and I thought about what I was going to do that day and how grateful I was to be able to do that today. And I prayed and it just like disintegrated. And like, that's the power of when you find what works for you, because what works for me might not work for you. And so that's why I believe in having lots of different options and approaches for folks, because this is not a one size fits all thing. This is a journey of finding out, you know, what works well for you. Yeah, I mean, they make such a big difference. And again, it doesn't take long. So do not be discouraged if you're not an hour long meditator. And also do not be discouraged if you don't like static meditation. It is not for everyone. And for some folks, it's incredibly triggering. And so knowing your limits and knowing what feels good to you and why, and knowing when you don't want to do something and you're navigating away from it, are you running from it? Or is it just something that's really not for you? So, you know, building up that self-awareness to understand how these different practices and things impact you and what will ultimately work best for you to be able to really like have that resilience and be able to like keep going. You know what I mean? That's where all of these tools and practices come in place and can really make the difference for you.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is I'm hearing the two big things here. It's choice, the choices that we make, learning how to create those choices in our lives on a daily basis, and a toolkit, right? And so like you said, it's not like there's no one size fits all toolkit for being able to manage stress. You know, it's not like, right, if you do this, this, and this, no more stress, guys, everything's great, you're going to be wonderful. But it's about saying, okay, today, like you said, I woke up grumpy. I'm going to go pray. I'm going to go do my yoga. I'm going to do some breathing. I'm going to do some stretching. You know, it's having as many different tools in your toolkit so that whatever the situation is, you can pull one out and say, this one's going to work for today.
Absolutely. And like you said, choice. So having the toolkit and the willingness to decide that you are going to take the initiative to move yourself out of this space to be the person that you need to be that day. Because, you know, I was listening to a podcast recently and I wish that I could word it as eloquently as she can, because I'll get a little strict on you, like, you know, listen, the choice is yours, you know. But she, you know, talks about how we, as beautiful as it is that we have, you know, entered this space of, you know, accepting that it's okay not to be okay. One thing that I like to highlight is that it's also okay to be okay. I think that we have, you know, developed a culture that can be very addicted to our sadness, to our anxiety, to our stress, and wear it like a badge of honor to say, hey, I am here. But it is our responsibility to acknowledge that you are here and to put the tools in place to help you move forward. Because to stay stuck there, you know, one principle that I teach on is called the 10-90 rule. And what it says is that 10% of life is what happens to you and 90% is how you respond. And so this is about looking at the things in your life and recognizing that the majority of your stressors are going to be outside of your control. But what you can control is how you choose to respond to those stressors. That response that you have, that is no one's responsibility but your own. And so it is your responsibility to find those tools and strategies that's going to help you respond in the most optimal way. I don't know if that means taking a walk around the block every day or coloring in a coloring book or, you know, watching The Office or, you know, whatever it is, but making sure that you are taking that time to help yourself get into position to be the best person that you need to be for whatever it is that you need to show up for.
Yeah, I'm just like I'm letting that sink in because it's there's so much depth to what you just said, right? Mm-hmm. It's the realness of the situation that we're in on a regular basis, and it's allowing it to be a journey that you're on, and that wherever you are is okay. So I love the fact that you give the example of you woke up grumpy. So it's not like you can't wake up grumpy. I love the fact that you talked about, you know, needing to sometimes go take a walk or mm-hmm. watch The Office, whatever. These little manifestations that we create allow us to say, this is the life that we want to have, right? This is our only life that we know of. And so what are we going to do with it? And so we can choose to, like you said, wear our stressors as a badge of honor, or we can say, those don't serve me. So I'm going to go be the best I can be for my students, for my coworkers, for my family, for whatever you're showing up with. And so I think that there's just so much to unpack there. And mm-hmm. so I think that's really, you know, something that I think as you're doing your trainings, you know, how do you help people to begin to unpack those things? How do you help them to begin to make these little shifts as you're talking about to start small, to then have that grow?
Yeah, well, definitely, you know, having people sit and look at their stressors, you know what I mean? Like, what are the things that are currently on their plate that are, you know, causing them the stress, but then also having them look at how many of them can you actually control? And then mm-hmm. how are you allowing the things that you are stressed about to impact your life when you can't control those things anyway, right? So that's one piece of it. Speaking to the long-term impacts of unmanaged stress usually gets a few people like, oh, you know, when they realize that, you know, I think it's over, I know for sure it's over 75% of doctor's visits are stress related, right? And so, you know, having them recognize like, hey, you know, when you're tense in your shoulders or, you know, some of these different things that you're experiencing could be a manifestation of not taking care of yourself, right? And then also providing lots of variety and really reinforcing and letting folks know this is my framework, these five things, breathing and stretching, gratitude, journaling, affirmations, and positive perspective. But yours may look a little bit different, and that's okay. This is an offering of a buffet, if you will, of ideas that you can use, and taking them through and showing them the science and the exercise, you know, different things that they can do. But then also just reinforcing, you know, find those things that work for you. What are the things that allow you to, you know, feel good and to, you know, that you can sprinkle throughout your day, even if it's not my framework. So just encouraging them to step out and find those things that do work well for them. So yeah, just making sure that you kind of put it in their face and present it in a way where it's like, if I don't do something about this, like what's going to happen? Am I not going to be able to be in the classroom anymore? Am I, you know, going to make myself sick? Am I going to regret the last 10 years of my life? You know what I mean? And you know, you were talking about, you know, making sure that you can show up for your students and you can show up for your families and, you know, your school and all of these different things, but show up for yourself. Because if you can't, you know, if you're not taking care of yourself, then you're really not going to be able to do those things for everyone. And that's, you know, whether I'm working in corporate or in education, this is one of the biggest things that I see. So people want me to come in and facilitate a training because them. My students need this. So please come and train me on how to do this. My staff needs this. So please, you know, when I'm in corporate. And so then I always want to look at the person who's calling me in and what are you doing? You know, what are you having the teachers do for themselves? What are you having your staff, you know, instead of, you know, like there's layers to this, right? And we all are interconnected, but at our core, we have to take care of like ourselves, or we're not going to be able to show up, for these roles and to like carry out what we need to be doing in whatever space each day.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that it's a powerful motivator, that sort of question about like, how do you see this playing out in your life if you maybe don't make a change? And so what do you notice from teachers who do kind of hear that? You know, maybe there's a wake-up call when they're working with you, or they've known there's one and they finally fully recognize that maybe taking that pause in one of your workshops. How do you see that play out? Or how do they see that play out over time? How have you seen that really create change for those teachers who kind of are like, or just people in general who get the wake-up call and take action? Small action, right? Those little bits, right, and steps and scattering it around.
Yeah. Well, you know, I see the most success, like you said, with people who take small action. I think when we try to completely just, you know what, like people get excited and leave and try to completely change everything that they've been doing. And then, you know, fall off of it very fast. It's about those incremental changes, you know what I mean? Just like how the practice is additive, right? But it's like sprinkling those little bits in your day. That's where I see the people that have the most success, is where they just take it day by day and they try and they tweak and say, I'm going to try this today. I'm going to just practice 3 things of gratitude instead of sitting and having a 20-minute journaling practice on gratitude, right? Like, so easing your way into these things and letting it develop as a habit is where I see the most success for people, when they take it seriously, when they're consistent and very intentional about it and don't try to change everything in a day. Because at the end of the day, you're fighting against habits that you've built over years, right? Right. And so we need to slowly introduce these things and, you know, just kind of play around with how they are making a difference in our life and allowing ourselves to see that, see the change, you know? Like we said, you don't really slow down. Right. So, you know, making sure that you're checking in and noticing, like, but how does that actually make me feel? Is this actually, like, making a difference?
I love that. And I think, you know, the next question that comes to mind for me, Amanda, is, you know, so say I'm a head of a school, I'm a principal, I'm someone who informs professional development, I'm someone who sees what's happening in the classrooms. What are the signs of things such as like compassion fatigue or just the overwhelming stress? Like what does a leader in a school see to know that, you know, maybe I need to like take a step back as a school leader and figure out how to address this, but how do they even identify these issues in the first place?
Yeah, I think, you know, leaders need to listen to their teachers. And as you probably know, listening is so much more than what you hear. It's also what you see. Paying attention to, you know, is my staff. And I mean, honestly, it's 2020. So to say, is my staff agitated? Or is anyone snippy? Is anyone, you know, so some of these things that are, you know, inherently like, you know, signs that someone may be experiencing, things like burnout. You've got folks that are taking off work more. If you have folks that, you know, maybe you have a teacher that, you know, is usually super engaged with their students, and now like things are kind of starting to change, or you're seeing more issues coming out of this classroom, or you're seeing that disconnect, or, you know, they're late to meetings each time, or when they come in, they just like don't kind of have that same energy, and looking at them as a person, you know what I mean? Not a number.
Right.
Because that's where you start to enter that compassion fatigue, where it's just like kind of everybody is like, okay, I got another teacher here, blah, blah, blah. No, you know, that's Sandy. And Sandy doesn't usually operate that way. Is Sandy okay? And actually checking in on the human being and not just the human doing and the productivity of what they're doing for your campus, for your school. It's really looking at like, how are they on an individual level and what do they need? And, you know, you can take things like needs assessments in your schools. And I know that, you know, that you get these assessments and folks don't always want to answer them honestly, right, but some people will. And when they tell you that they're frustrated about this, listen to them. I remember when, you know, when COVID first hit, all of the people talking about what was going on in schools, I was like, but where are the teachers? There was no one that had to actually facilitate these classes for these students. And that voice needs to be heard in the room. And I think that we need to think about that from a leadership level to our teachers, and even from teachers to our kids. I read this morning, there's a woman that I follow, you know, a friend, we've been at conferences together, but she was sharing that a student, or I'm sorry, her daughter got in bed and was crying. And so she thought some, you know, she wasn't sure what was wrong. And she asked her, and she's like, I don't want to go to virtual school. I miss my teacher, because their school got closed down. She's like, oh, I miss my teacher, and, you know, all of these things. And, you know, we always talk about check on your strong friend. And she goes, check on your strong kid too. And so I think that, you know, just like a leader in your, like, you want to be checked on by the people who are leading you, think about your teachers in that same format. It is a trickle down effect. And when people feel cared about, when people feel like their needs are heard, you know, think about how much we talk about how if a student just has one person in their life that they know cares about them, how big of a difference it makes. Right. We're just really big kids with jobs that make right. money and have to pay bills. Yeah. We still right. need to feel loved. We still need to feel valued and cared about and concerned for. And so take that into your schools and make sure that you are getting, you know, your teachers access to resources to take care of themselves, reminders to take care of themselves, and affirmation that it is okay to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of hit on that, you know, teachers are frontline workers thing that I don't think people recognize. And also that, you know, that impact of just thinking about maybe school administrators who really are in a position where resources are thin right now. You know,
yeah.
Any time with faculty is probably spent discussing the latest regulations or the latest thing that's changing, or and, you know, administrators just have their you know, they're on so many calls and meetings to discuss this stuff. But that actually, it's not just like this, you know, oh, we need to make teachers feel better. Like, there is a trickle-down effect. Children are impacted. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the difference between someone going to a hospital and getting taken care of a nurse from a nurse who's friendly, you know, as opposed to a nurse who's not. Right. There's a measurable difference in recovery. And that this is you know, teachers' wellness directly impacts academic performance of students, whether you see it clearly or not. And I think that's a really, you know, there's just so many ways in which the work we're talking about that you do right. here touches so many different aspects of just improving the overall quality and just positive environment, optimistic environment of a classroom, of a school.
Yeah, I mean, you have to take care of your stakeholders. And there's, you know, we have so many stakeholders in the school. I mean, your students and their families and your communities and all of this. But, you know, having that good leadership that can recognize we need, you know, resources in here, or, you know, and with whatever you can have, right? Like, if you can't get access to training, there is so much information even out on the internet. And something as simple as, like we said, you know, it's additive, right? Like, it's in those little things. But something as simple as, like you had us pause and do that deep breath in here today, something like that, just to release a little bit of that tension before you start a meeting. Something as simple as checking in and actually saying, how are you? And then pausing, right, to listen to the response, and then responding to that response, or letting it sit and letting them know that you're thinking about that, and maybe following up in another capacity will make a big difference, right? So, you know, schools are, they're businesses. We have to take care of our employees. We have to take care of our stakeholders, our customers, if you will, right? And so, you know, and that also comes down to, like I said, you know, we oftentimes skip past the people, but it is trickle down. And so you're wanting to take care of your teachers, take care of yourself as well, because it starts with you. So you have to model that. You have to model that importance and use that as a, you know, avenue. One, you'll understand better how important it is to take care of yourself. But two, you'll understand how necessary it is for your teachers to take care of themselves. And as they do that, they'll recognize how important it is for their students to have these access to these resources. Because these kids are, you know, they are in a time where it is, I mean, I never learned stress management strategies growing up. And now kids are actually learning strategies to take care of themselves at a very young age. You know what I mean? So we have such a great opportunity here. But yeah, I mean, just really looking at the whole ecosystem and how it's impacted when people are taken care of.
Yeah, I like that. That's that's what it comes down to. That's the crux of it all, is taking care of people, taking care of ourselves, taking care of each other. How do we get more Amanda into our lives? How do schools and educators get you into their world? How does Mako mindfulness take over the stress management and help us to calm ourselves down and take these breaths?
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, if you are just looking for like any ideas for stress, if you need any optimism in your life, yes, definitely follow me on social media. Mako Mindfulness on Instagram, Amanda Muhammad on LinkedIn, but I post lots of breathing exercises. I have like animated cartoons that will teach you different things about stress and different strategies for coping, and even some talking head like live videos. So you can start there by, you know, check out my content. You can go to themakomethod.com, and that will actually give you a guide that you can download with 50 ideas. It'll teach you about my framework. It's completely free, but you can feel free to start there and just expose yourself up to some of these tools, resources, things that you can do for yourself, and also things that you can share with your with the people that you're serving. And then on Mako Mindfulness, it's actually a resource site. So we're steady adding resources over there that you can kind of go in and look in these different categories and learn different things about my framework, those different practices that you can use. And then, of course, if you are interested in training, I facilitate training for a living. And so if you're looking for virtual PD or any staff development, anything like that, I am here to be a resource. So you can visit either one of my websites, Mako Mindfulness, Amanda Muhammad, get in touch with me, put in an inquiry for a training, and we can chat and see which one of my resources would be best to serve your staff. And lastly, I am launching a course. So it's called The Cost of Care. And so this is a course that is for helping professionals. And what I mean by that is people who show up and serve other people. Like I said, oftentimes we care so much about everyone else, and we need to have that same care for ourselves. And so a course is launching that talks to you about things like compassion fatigue, moral distress, burnout, vicarious trauma, and how to cope with those strategies, and just different exercises and things to consider and moments to take that pause, evaluate where you are, and have strategies to help you get to where you want to go.
Love it. And I think that, you know, you have so many great resources, but more importantly, Amanda, you are a great resource. And so we're very appreciative of your time and your insights and your wonderful sharings in this episode. And we will put all of the information of how to get in touch with you into the notes and into our posts about this. And so thank you so much, Amanda, for being here with us and for sharing with us and for everything that you brought to our world and bringing a little bit more optimism to it.
Thank you, Amanda.
Good. Absolutely. To meet you. Thank you so much for allowing me to share my practice with you and create a great day.
If you're someone who spends their days caring for other people, there's something you need to know. There's a cost of caring. And when you're always giving, you have to make sure you're investing in yourself as well. Your heart wants to serve and make a difference in the world. But if you're going to continue to show up without burning out, becoming resentful, and feeling stressed all the time, you have to take good care of yourself. That's why we've created the Cost of Care course, to help you fall in love with serving again and give you tools and strategies to both prevent and manage your stress. There is a cost to caring, and with our strategies, you can move forward sustainably. Visit www.makomindfulness.com/thecostofcare and use the code AMPLIFY for 20% off of your course. Take good care of yourselves, take good care of each other, and create a great day.
Josh and I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode of Amplifying Optimism in Education. Please join us next week for another new episode and conversation with an innovative educator from around the world.